Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
All of us at Podcast One want to say thank you for listening to this show. We would also like to ask a small favor of you. It'll take less than 10 minutes, and if you're one of the first few people to fill out the survey, we'll give you something for your time. We would like you to complete a short survey for us to help make things better around here. Just go to listeningsurvey.com, and everything will be right there for you. That's listeningsurvey.com. The first 125 people to go and complete this survey will get a $10 gift certificate to restaurant.com, and there is a chance to win an additional $100 Amazon gift card. Filling out the survey will really help us out. Go to listeningsurvey.com, and thanks for listening.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, from American Dresser, Tom Berenger, and Keith David. With Gina Grad on news, Paul Bryan on sound effects, and Jeff Cesario is here for the sports with Chet Waterhouse. And now, if he seems choked up, it's because he just watched a very emotional Pizza Hut commercial. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on, got to get it on. No choice, maybe on mandate. Get it on, thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing. We will be at the Moore Theater tonight doing a live pod. Lots of good stuff and surprises planned for you guys. So come on out. Still a few tickets left if you're in the Seattle area. I want to thank Castrol Challenge. You can tweet us your question at Adam Carolla Show, hashtag Castrol Challenge. HBO, Canelo, and Golovkin. That's coming up on Saturday, 8 o'clock pay-per-view. And Bet Online. Go to betonline.ag. Good day, Gina Grad.
Good day to you.
And Bald Brian.
Bring on the bitch.
Keith David is in studio, and Tom Berenger is in studio as well. We're excited. American Dresser, the name of their new project. Good to see you guys.
What's happening? Good to see you.
The movie is in theaters and on demand starting on Friday, September 21st. Gina Gershon, different Gina in there, and Bruce Dern as well. American Dresser refers to the dressed, fully dressed hog, I believe, like a big Harley, big motorcycle with all the stuff on it, right?
Yeah, it's a generic term that also can be referred to as a bagger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I like motorsports, but I don't know a lot about the hogs and all that. But Billy Joel was one of the consulting producers on the film, and it strikes me he does get around on a motorcycle, right?
I think he owns about eight of them or something.
Yeah. You know what I like?
Isn't it You May Be Right that starts off with the motorcycle sound? Isn't that?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Or moving on, or moving out. Maybe it's moving out. But either way, I think he took a bad spill on one a few years ago, and he's back on that horse.
It can happen, yeah. Believe me.
Tom and Tom and Keith go way back. They started in Platoon together all those years ago, and then have done every major movie since then, including, Tom, Major League, Sniper, Training Day, Inception, The Big Chill.
Jesus, between these two guys, a dozen amazing films at least.
Each. And with Keith, The Thing, Crash, There's Something About Mary, Requiem for a Dream, and all that. So where do we even begin? First, Keith David, I'm sure you're aware of the David Keith. And it comes up from time to time.
It comes up every once in a while.
Yes. Yeah. David Keith was an Officer and a Gentleman, right, and an actor who's done 130 films.
Matter of fact, I just found, just to show you how sometimes the internet lies, I just got credited with doing Officer and a Gentleman.
Congratulations.
I said, hey,
that's quite the
thanks for thinking about it. Hey, you know.
Yeah. I just ran into that with Brian, who was our resident film buff.
But that's only 10 minutes ago.
He didn't know who David Keith was, and I said, Officer and a Gentleman, and your picture came up.
Okay, now, so you know I'm not lying, right?
You search for David Keith, and up comes Keith David.
Okay. Right. Yep. And now when you do the local morning show, Sam, who does entertainment reporting, Sam Rubin,
that's right,
can call you Lou Gossett Jr. when you come on the set. We'll have come full circle. All right, so this movie, how does this work? Who contacts who? Who gets the script? Who finds out about it? And where do you shoot it? And tell me all about it.
Well, you go ahead. Yeah,
David Keith passed.
Yes, And so, yeah, and so,
and James Earl Jones passed on.
Right. So I get a call from the writer director, and ask. And I think Tom was already attached by the time.
Are you guys into bikes? Because you're riding them. I saw the trailer. And it looked good.
I wasn't, but my wife is. So I got. Back into, I had one in Kansas City about a million years ago, like a 450 Honda that was my only means of transportation. So, yeah, I had one then, and then I moved to New York where I went, whoa, what am I going to do with this? You know,
yeah.
Sold it quickly.
I had a Honda 404.
Did you?
Myself.
Yeah.
So it was only 50 cc's behind.
You. No, I have the only relationship I have with a motorcycle is when I told my wife, you know, I'm going to get one. And she said, no, you're not.
but let's examine that for a second. Because if I said to my wife, I'm going to get a Ducati, she'd say, knock yourself out.
Right.
Which, oh. Let's read into that. You know what I mean? I think your wife cares about your well-being.
Well, this is true. I mean, it didn't help that a good friend of ours, who very proficient on the bike, right as I said, I'm going to get it, because I had talked to him and we were talking about it. He's going to help train me and all this stuff. And he came out of Central Park and hit an oil spill.
Oh. Mm.
And half of his body was covered in scabs. And so she was like, no, you're not.
You know, I talked to two racers, two guys, a little bit older. One guy's named Alan Ducadne. He's kind of a famous guy, and the other guy's a guy named
Ducadne
Jonathan.
Alan?
Yes. he was in Gentleman and an Officer. I'm at the race at Monterey doing my vintage car race scene a few weeks ago, and I run into one guy. You see these guys like once a year at the event, you know, and first guy I ran into, I go, how you doing? And he goes, oh, not so good. Almost had like my toe amputated, whatever. And so you think, oh, he got into a car wreck. He races car. Something happened to the car. He said, I was out on my motorcycle, took a spill. Was horrible. Alan Ducadne, the race car driver, I run into later on in the day. I say to him, how are you doing, Alan? He said, not good. I got all busted up. I go, oh, another car crash. Or is it a car? Nope. Motorcycle. Got punted. He's an Englishman, so he says he was punted.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Off the bike.
If you think back to the movie, you remember this, the first scene. He gets killed in a motorcycle accident down some little country lane in England by a big lorry.
Right.
Like they're both, but there's only a very narrow lane. And then you think about all the times he must have ridden one out there in the desert and, you know, was on camels and was in combat and gone through all these battles and stuff and survived all that and then died in a motorcycle accident. But I think he probably would have been okay with that.
I sold my bike to a guy who took off on it and crashed it. On the street I lived on.
Oh, no.
In view of me.
Oh.
He literally gave me, like, the cash, and I was standing at the end of my driveway going, see you down the road, and he crashed it.
Oh, no.
On the street, and then he pushed it back to me, and he was shaking like a leaf, and he had a little road rash, and he said, can I have my money back? And I said, oh, no.
I don't have
that anymore.
No.
He's like, you're standing at the end of your driveway in sweatpants. Where did the money go? And I'm like, well, that's my money.
No, you're never mine.
And he said, I don't want the bike anymore. And I said, well, then you need to sell your motorcycle. And I ended up selling it for him down the road. So, all right, moral of the story is don't ride a bike.
See American Dresser.
So, yeah, let's talk about the movie for a second, then we'll get into all the other stuff. Where'd you guys shoot it?
In Syracuse.
You know, around the Finger Lakes and up in that area.
And how does a guy like Billy Joel consult as a producer on a film like this? Did you see him? Was he there?
We never met him. He had a relationship with the director. They're both Long Island guys.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, people in the business, they know people in the business, and you get to have a conversation. So he had a conversation. He wrote this movie, and he talked to him. He said, hey, you know, I know you ride bikes, and might you be interested in doing the music? So he said, I don't know. Let me see. So they kept in conversation. Apparently, it worked out.
Did switching subjects on into Platoon, you guys were in your 20s, early 30s. I mean, you guys were young when you, when you did that. Was I love Oliver Stone movies, and in kind of a weird way, Quentin Tarantino is now picked up for me where like Stone left off, in the sense that I used to always really look forward to an Oliver Stone movie, and I kind of have that with Tarantino. But when he did before Platoon, he hadn't had a bunch of credits or success, had he? I mean, was he?
That was his big, big first directorial
hit. Did you know who he was?
I saw Salvador
before. Oh, I love Salvador.
And I love James. I love the movie.
James Woods. And,
yeah, I love the humor in it. I just thought the whole. The characters and the whole
was
idea
the,
was.
What was the other one?
He wrote Scarface.
A Scarface.
The hand.
Yeah. The hand. Right.
Yeah. And he wrote Scarface. Yeah. And he also wrote Midnight Express.
Midnight Express.
Oh, right.
That's,
yeah.
That's right.
Salvador. I'm going to go ahead and lump Salvador in with Runaway Train.
Okay.
I'm going to say these are really good movies that people haven't seen, dude, with people in it that you recognize, guys who you may know from other movies. Like, you don't think of Jim Belushi as a fine thespian or whatever. You'll love him in this.
Oh, he was great.
What Tom Arnold was to True Lies, that's like it. You didn't think Tom Arnold's
perfect
good
time,
or good
place.
Actor, whatever it is. You'll like him in this movie a lot. Right. James Woods, you'll forget from his crazy tweets how good he was back then, and just what a cool movie that was.
John Voight from Runaway Train.
Yeah, yeah. Watch those two movies. They're both sleepers. They don't show up on cable, but they're good, strong films. So you knew, being in the business and being a student of it, you knew he was a pretty capable guy.
Yeah.
But did you know Platoon was going to be what it is?
He won an Academy Award for... the drug turkey.
Brian Hepburn.
Midnight Express.
Midnight Express. When I read the script, there were, besides the dialogue, but specifically dialogue, but also like some of the descriptions of just the battle scenes, I was like, I mean, they were almost poetic. And I think this guy's been there.
Right.
And when I asked my agent, she said, "Oh yeah, he was a grunt in Vietnam." Wow. I went, "Yeah, okay, I'm in."
Do you have to kind of prepare for being miserable for X amount of months when you do something like that? Because I kind of tell people all the time, they go, "Oh, it's just a movie set. Those guys are pampered." I said, "If a guy's in a swamp, he's in a swamp. Like, he may have a dressing room and a bathrobe, but
later,
he's still in a swamp for the whole day."
We weren't pampered. But by the way, I don't think that bothered anybody particularly. I mean, the shooting was actually kind of easy compared to the training camp, right, where we got no sleep. And we were constantly humping and pissed off and cranky. There were a lot of fights, a lot of arguments, that kind of shit.
So he put everyone through the camp.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And he told Dale Dye, the Marine, you know.
Oh, Dale Dye.
Yeah. He told him, he says, "I want him to look like we did." You know what I mean? He goes, "Don't kill him." But he says, I want him to look like we did. And we did. I mean, it was just exhausted. Everybody lost weight, including the weightlifter kind of guys, you know.
Right.
Everybody lost weight.
Where? How many days or weeks did you do that?
3 weeks.
Where did you do that? 3 weeks?
3 weeks, yeah.
That's a pretty extended stay.
Yeah, and I think it ended like, let's see, March 18th. It was like right after St. Patrick's Day, March 18th. Yeah.
Well, we left like the day after Marcos left, because we were delayed.
Yeah.
We were delayed. The shooting was delayed
due to
all the unrest.
Airports were closed.
And the day after Marcos left.
Was it in the Philippines?
In the Philippines.
The day after Marcos left.
We're talking about Imelda Marcos.
Marcos left. Yeah. I was on a plane. You were on a plane. Yeah. Right. And then we had like one meeting in the hotel, and then we went into the bush. And it was never the same after that. and then when we finished, he said, "All right, I'm going to bring out, like, there's going to be liquor. We got beers, like, you know, Filipino Special Forces guys have got this shit they drink. I don't know. What was it?
Lambanol,
yeah, which is like,
delicious.
They're white lightning.
Healthy.
Right.
It's like a Long Island iced tea. You know, it goes down smooth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But you regret
but
it
after you've had a couple.
Comes back in smoother.
Well, it'll come and mule kick the crap out of you. Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin Dillon fell into a fire.
Kevin Dillon.
but yeah, and then he said now, and he said, you probably remember this, but he said, okay, go back to your hooches. Make sure you got all your shit together, ready to go. Put anything in a rucksack that you got laying loose. He says, you have a flashlight there. It's going to get dark. We'll be partying. He says, but we're going to be up at zero dark hundred. These little buses are coming to pick you all up, and we're going to the first location from here. So we never get the hotel. Right? We just went direct from there to location. And it was pretty tired because nobody had any sleep for 3 weeks. And then plus they had that night.
And that all was probably by design to keep you
when they got on
haggard.
Those buses,
people were just nodding out.
They were nodding out. Nobody was talking. We got to location, and Dale says, all right, Sergeant Barnes, tell them to get, you know. So I said, everybody off the buses, get over to the armors, pick up your M16s, get your rucksacks, put everything on, let's go. We're marching up the hill. So we march up the hill, and no one is talking. Even those little gabby guys that talk a lot,
sure,
out of nervousness or whatever, no one was talking. And all you could hear were the feet going up the hill. Meantime, the crew, it's their first day of work. And they're all happy and talking, and they're riding up in Jeeps and stuff. And Oliver goes by in a Jeep, like Douglas MacArthur or something. You know, I look at him, head up there. Okay, you know, and I see a little Filipino kid on a water buffalo with a travois pulling giant Klieg lights with a little stick like mm-hmm. this, and that's going up the hill. Mm-hmm. Not a word out of any of us. We get up there, and Captain Dice says, all right, Barnes, tell everybody to get there. Just lie down until they're called up to camera. He says, the first people up, bang, bang, bang. I called three of them up. You know, they go up, shoot their scene, went to sleep.
Did he call you by your character's name?
Oh, yeah,
we all called ourselves by our character name for the full 2 weeks.
Or ranks or whatever.
That's a great detail.
Yeah, constantly. And I have to say, I didn't know everybody's names.
Yeah.
Until later.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember, you know, now you obviously, films are shot out of order.
But get this, after we finish,
mm-hmm.
I got phone calls. People were going through post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah.
And I was getting phone calls from a long letter from Charlie. And then, you know, this you know, yelling phone call from John McGinley, who played Sergeant O'Neill.
Sure.
Why is Charlie Sheen up all night? That guy's got a lot of energy.
You know, and he's telling me about man. Johnny Depp's girlfriend broke up with him. He spent every dime he made on the movie, spent calling her in Europe or some shit. And he's going on and... and Charlie's on about something else, and then my radio guy, I said, hey, Ivan, how's it going? He goes, I don't know, Sergeant Barnes. Like, he says, you know, I went out, I saw a couple of the guys, and Susie, his wife, adorable, and they're still together. she goes, what are you going out with your army buddies again? People were blowing auditions because they were just so...
Well, if you
they weren't actors. They weren't.
You think about.
They were like guys that came back and wanted to be with the group.
That's how
they did not want to be going into audition. And I told them there was the day we went out in the last hump. It was a 2 day hump, and I broke character and I said, "Listen, I just want to say something. I think number one, this is going to be a classic. You know, like Casablanca on the waterfront. I think it's going to be a classic. This movie." And they're all like.
They were so depleted.
Like, yeah, they're depleted. They're just with their mouths hanging out, looking. You're like, and I said, and the other thing I want to say is, and then one day you will tell your kids or your grandchildren about it. I said that the other thing is, you really young guys, you guys that are like 19 and stuff, you're going to go back to Hollywood and you're going to go up for these new teenage movies that have started,
mm-hmm. right?
Because they had just started previous mm-hmm. to that. They didn't have them when I started or you started, but. And I said, and you're going to go in for these, and you're going to go, what's this about?
Yeah, yeah.
I go, because it's like the guys that I met in college, it came back, you know, on the GI Bill to the university, like, they couldn't concentrate. They couldn't be students.
Yeah, and also it feels like, what are we messing around with this fluff for? Yeah. We just did something real.
Like, yes. Hey, take this seriously. It's like, I'll tell you what seriously is.
Yeah, but, you know, it's interesting, the human dynamic, because whenever they do those studies where they, like, we take four Stanford students, and we're doing a study where we put them in a room, and we make one in charge of the other three, and then we pay the other one more than... These guys were college students 10 minutes ago. They're now spinning off into some sort of other world.
Like inmates and correction officers.
Obviously, they know they're in the whatever building in the middle of campus, and they know where they're at. They're not been drugged or anything. It's pretty insane how quickly we can take the human mind, even though intellectually, obviously, you know, it's a movie, you're there. They know they're in a study, and they're getting paid, and there's a guy with a clipboard, but they immediately just can buy into it.
Well, part of it was the whole endeavor and the exhaustion and what we accomplished and stuff. And the other thing was the camaraderie. And it's like, we're living together, like, you know, out there.
That was
probably one of the best things about the whole experience. You don't get to. I don't even in my it was only my second movie, so it was completely new to me, as you mentioned.
After Officer and a Gentleman,
right?
Okay,
immediately following,
right?
I mean, Tom was the only one that I recall who didn't you have a little book that you kept or something, like a journal or something, because he's the only one that knew this is going to... I mean, we all thought it was going to be special.
I tape recorded every single actor and some of the crew people. And
really?
I interviewed everybody.
Wow. Well, there's Hearts of Darkness, right?
Right.
The great doc.
George Hickenlooper.
Are you thinking about any doc ideas?
There's one out now. There's one.
Oh, there is.
What is it called? Not Band of Brothers. It's called.
No. We'll look it up. But do you remember? I will tease this. Do you guys remember the first scene you shot? Because you shoot out of order, and it's got to be interesting to be
Brothers in Arms
in a really intense scene. But I'm curious. Which scene, if you can recall, that you guys remember shooting first? Hold on. First, I'll tell you about Castrol Edge. You can tweet us at Adam Carolla Show with your hashtag Castrol Challenge with your questions about Castrol Edge and or your car questions. Brought to you by Castrol Edge. Formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction and maximizes engine performance three times.
Three times, fool!
Stronger against viscosity breakdown and leading. Full synthetic. Well, you got a question, Max Pana?
Yes, I do. This is from Twitter, at Divine Sandwich Maker wants to know. Hashtag Castrol Challenge. I used to get my tires rotated with every oil change, but my new car requires oil changes at a lower frequency. Should I just get my tires rotated as before or change their schedule along with the oil change?
First off, you can find out what the manufacturer of the tires and the cars recommend and do that. But I don't know, rotating your tires is like telling your kids you love them. You just can't do it enough. You just can't do it enough.
Are you kidding me?
That's my son. So it's never going to hoit, as a Jewish doctor would say. So I would go ahead and do it more frequently. And that's true. You don't have to change oil as much, especially with the Castrol Edge. Full synthetic, man. All right. First scenes. Any thoughts about that?
As I remember the first scene, we were at the Air Force Base and the bodies coming in.
No.
Wrong.
No. I mean, and that. That's like Charlie's first scene, I think, where he's coming into Tan Son Nhut Airport in Saigon and. Their uniforms are all like really crisp, and their boots are black, you know, and everything. And then these salty vets walk by, and they go, "Hey, Sin Loi, buddy." Yeah. And they're walking by, and the caskets are going on the plane as the new guys come in.
That's the first thing I remember.
Yeah,
but it really was us marching through the.
It was just us going through the jungle, hear
right.
It's not like dialogue, but all you hear is a bunch of
Susanna over the
little radio talk. The radio chatter.
Yeah, that movie, as you think about it, was so insanely realistic.
Which is
and
pretty
intense.
Close to the beginning. Right. And the one thing about shooting that is because it was a jungle, you could shoot in order.
Mm-hmm. Because
helpful.
Well, think about it. You don't have like specific landmarks and streets,
right? Right.
And this
right.
And
right.
That and you know and you have the same props. And you could, if you wanted, you could shoot in order, which isn't a bad idea when you have that luxury, that liberty.
Was Stone doing a lot of rewriting on script? Was he on set? Was he giving you some leeway with improvisation?
He was giving leeway. He wasn't doing rewriting, but I came up with a couple of things, and he goes, hmm. And he kind of blinked his eyes and then walk away. I went, okay, well, all right. He didn't forget. 2 weeks later, he's going, remember what you said about do it.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would it be? He was very open to change. I mean, if you knew your character, that was the thing. If you knew your character, he's going, uh-huh, okay, great. You know.
So you guys have worked with everybody. Was Stone a tough guy to work with, or was he just sort of had ideas and wanted to execute them, or... Was he difficult?
He's a pretty passionate guy, but he's quiet too. You know, I mean, he and Dale were like a great team. I would see them step aside and confer sometimes.
Yeah, Dale dies. Dale around.
It's been 17 years.
He's on LA radio all the time, weighing in on things.
Mm-hmm. Always sort of chiming in if there's a
everybody event. In this business knows him.
Yeah,
everyone you talk to, they've all worked with him. They all know him. They goes, yep.
Now that he had, now they had Arlie Ermey killed. He's number one.
Right. Yeah. I didn't realize that's how
yeah.
it happened.
It's him and Arlie were the two guys that were going at it, or not going at it, but
yeah,
sort of
known
in that world.
Platoon number 83 on the AFI's top 100 of all time.
Wow. Top 100.
That's incredible. I mean, you know, to know at the time you're like, this is going to be, you know, this is going to be something special, and then for it to be something special.
You're literally, Tom's literally in there with kids. I mean, some of those guys were kids. It's crazy when you think about Kevin Dillon.
Johnny Depp.
And Johnny Depp. You think about these guys and you realize this movie's from 86, was it? I mean, you think, God, they were literally kids, so they had no idea what this was. And you were a little bit older and had a little bit of a feel for it.
That's why I told him that day. It was kind of a pat on the back before we went back into the bush again and went on another one of those, like, you know, days and stuff, or a couple days, and like a little pick-me-up. And the only – I don't know, nobody really said anything, but because then I said, all right, that's it. Move out. Let's go. And we took off. And Kevin Dillon quoted me on that later. I saw an interview he did. He said, I didn't know what he was talking about, and now it all makes sense.
Keith, you do a little singing as well?
Two of them every once in a while,
He did. We got him to do two in this one. Yeah, yeah.
are those original songs you're doing?
No, I'm doing mostly covers. I have been doing a tribute to Nat Cole.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a show called Too Marvelous for Words that I'll be doing in Georgia in November. And at the end of November, I'm going to be singing with the Pittsburgh Jazz Orchestra doing a tribute to Joe Williams.
Is that the best, I mean, for you? Is that where your passion lies?
Oh, my God. That's where my passion lies. You know, it's like when you talk about having the wind at your back, when you are standing in front of an 18-piece band and they're kicking butt, and everybody's, you know, on the same page. I mean, it's like there's nothing like it.
I've always been envious of musicians because I've always sort of thought that. I mean, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but I do stand up comedy. But I'm always sort of thinking about what it is I'm going to say next, or where are we going from here. There's a part of it where you're not. It's not all just sort of living it. If you're doing it right, it looks like it. But there's a part of you, as an actor, as a comedian or something, you go, what's my next
thing? An outline,
thing? It's an outline. And the jazz, it just feels like it's flowing, or it just feels like it's there.
That's what it's supposed to look like.
Eh? If you're doing it right.
if you're doing it right, and if you, you know, I mean, because, but of course you're thinking ahead. You know, this new show, I haven't done it before. It'll be the first time I'm doing it. So until you get used to it and you can relax, You do have to think about what's next, you know, do I remember the tempo? Okay, if I lose my tempo, who do I look at to get it back? You know, if I give him the signal, they're going to get it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's lots of things you think about, but you know, and then you got, and then you have to, you know, live in trust.
What do we need to know about Nat King Cole that maybe we don't? Died early.
He
would, right?
I mean, he died. He died very young, lung cancer. Right. He died right before. He died a month before his 46th birthday.
Oh, yeah, I remember he died young. I remember he died of lung cancer.
You know, he was the first black man to have a network television show. I mean, there were you know, in the early days of television, there were other black people on TV, but his was the first, you know.
Regular show.
Big regular show. And it got canceled because they couldn't find sponsorship, especially in the South. Mm-hmm. And that's where you get the line. And as a matter of fact, Dule Hill is coming into L.A. with a play called Afraid of the Dark. And that's a quote from Nat Cole. He said, well, you know, you're Nat King Cole. You know, I mean, you know, when the show aired for the year that it did air, it was great. It was in people's living rooms all over the country. He said, why did NBC run out of money? Why did you get canceled? He said, because Madison Avenue was afraid of the dark.
Wow.
What year was the show?
1956.
Wow.
This is a new play? This is a new play? Yeah. Are you?
No, my play is called Too Marvelous for Words. And it's, you know, kind of a review kind of.
There was a Nat King Cole. I remember when I was a kid, I think they had like one of those song compilation KTEL record album things.
Of course, yeah.
Like the Columbia Nat King Cole. Yeah. Who could forget the incomparable? Yeah. Nat
it was
King
called
Cole.
Unforgettable.
Yeah, we should try to see if we can find that commercial. It was like KTEL, Nat King Cole, you know, when they would have
the hits
record. Right. Like, here's how you knew you arrived. When you had your own compilation of hits.
Yeah,
if,
right.
If you were part of a pile of hits, you were just sort of one hit or two hit. But
it was always
had
just Nat King Cole and Henry Mancini.
Yeah, and I think
then John Denver came along.
Right.
And John Denver, I think like Smokey Robinson, who I love, who doesn't appear to age, by the way.
Yeah.
He's working hard.
Nat King Cole went too early, and Smokey's going to go too late.
That's right.
He looks brand. The guy just he just looks like he looked in 1957.
Right.
Now, and I'm sure he's got a little Grecian
help.
Formula in there, and maybe a little help. But I mean, see Smokey Robinson walking around. He's got like dark hair. He looks fine. Doesn't look any wrinkles or anything. Like this guy was singing hits in the 50s and the 60s. Where
and he's still sounding great.
He still sounds great. Where's his wrinkles?
It really don't crack.
No, it don't.
No, it don't.
All right. Do we have some video? I was asking about, you said you had a video of Keith singing, but I don't know what it said.
It's a video of Keith singing some Nat King Cole.
Sweet.
25
seconds. 25 seconds. We have a 25-second video.
Okay, it's the way it was weird. All right, so here we go. Sorry.
They say in Rain Tree County, there's a tree bright with blossoms of gold. But you will find the rain tree's a state of the mind, or a dream to unfold.
Velvety.
I'm picturing the character from Requiem for a Dream singing that.
No, please don't. God, don't ruin this for me.
It's almost unfair that there are so many of my favorite movies represented with these two guys. Like, I could do an hour with either one of them, Major League or Inception or Requiem for a Dream. Gina and I both love Cloud Atlas, which is a movie that doesn't get brought up a lot. It's the Wachowskis and also the director Ronald Aron. It's like three directors in one, and they told like five stories.
Yeah.
It's a three-hour movie.
Insane.
It's either the worst movie I've ever seen or the best, and I'm leaning towards the best. Keith David plays like three or four different characters. Can you just talk for a second about the process? Because it seems so overwhelming. You had to learn three, four different parts. You
and
know what I mean?
Brian and I have long bonded over
he
how
was
incredible
in his own
we think
repertory
this movie
company.
Is.
Yeah.
Right.
Tom Hanks.
It was magnificent. I mean, they worked on that for about 5 years together.
Shows.
It was wonderful for us because it was like one voice. I mean, they were so together in the vision of it. that, you know, it was sort of seamless. You know, you had this time period, you had that time period, you'd work on that, you'd work on that, you know.
It's a story told throughout time, right? So, like, there's a section in the 1800s, and there's a section in the early 1900s.
And into postmodern in the future.
Hundreds of years
and it transcends race and gender and age and everything else.
What year did it come out?
A couple years ago. 2012?
Well-ish.
What do you think it's – we have the Nat King Cole KTEL commercial. what do you think it's sitting at on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to guess it's somewhere in the middle, like between 50 and 60.
I don't think people understood it like Brian and I did.
I'm
going to
guess some people loved it and some people hated it because it is
– If you don't come to the table when you go to the movies to be engaged, to think – well, then it's not going to be a movie for you because it is. You know, it will engage you if you like to think. If you let it. But if you just want to be mindlessly entertained,
this is not the movie for you. Yeah.
Speaking of mindless entertainment, we have a KTEL commercial from 1971.
A tribute to Nat King Cole, introducing this double album set of his greatest hits. Nat King Cole's velvet voice was his passport into the hearts of people everywhere. And you'll hear his greatest hits on this wonderful album. Songs such as Nature Boy, Tenderly, Stardust, Point Siena, The Girl from Ipanema, Magic Moments, Little Coquette, and many others. At four, he started his music career, and there was no stopping Nat King Cole. Singer, composer, author, recording artist. Nat King Cole was truly an international star and became a legend in the world of music. Over the years, he recorded nearly 700 songs. No words can describe Nat King Cole's work as much as a few minutes of listening to this album. A tribute to Nat King Cole. A two-album set. A true collector's item. Only $4.99. Table
wow.
set. $5.99.
Oh, the price.
They're paying
wow.
you.
You can't afford not to.
Yeah.
Wow. Was that on YouTube?
Yeah,
I guess so.
There may be another one. I don't know. I remember
pretty K-telly.
I remember it. I remember from my youth. I remember just sitting home going, "Well, there's another item I won't own, but somebody will enjoy that." Because if you have to mail away for it or spend money, or it brings joy.
Well, listen. Now we have Amazon. Everybody's mailing away for it.
I know. I wonder Yeah, it was kind of nice when Natalie Cole, right, did the...
Oh,
it's kind of nice she did the duet with her dad. Let me tell you about someone who is not doing a duet, Canelo versus Golovkin. Those guys will be beating each other's heads in. Saturday, September 15th, live from the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Canelo Alvarez and Gennady. Triple G Golovkin collide for the middleweight championship of the world for a second time. I got a rematch. The first one was a very competitive match. Maybe give the nod to Golovkin, but it ended up being a draw. So now they're going at it again, and this time they're not going to leave it up to the judges. Why would you? Alvarez is 49-1-2 with 34 KOs. Golovkin is 37-0-1. Which is that one. 33 knockouts. They've promised they're not leaving it to the judges this time. Don't miss the Canelo versus Golovkin Saturday, September 15th, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, live on pay-per-view. This is going to be a war, people. All right.
Georgia.
What are you guys talking about? Talking about
The hurricane.
Oh, the hurricane.
Yeah,
I live out that way, right?
Live there, and it's like I was just telling him because my wife is supposed to fly up to Syracuse because we're doing a premiere in Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday. Yeah, Saturday.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And I'm just wondering, will the Savannah Airport be closed? But we're down in that corner. Georgia hasn't gone into full alert yet, but it's just hard to tell because now they're talking about maybe it'll turn south.
Right.
Usually they all go up to North Carolina.
There's a lot of the hell they do Dawson's Creek.
They did that in
Atlanta?
No. That's in Carolina.
Wilmington.
Oh. Yeah. Is a lot of filming up that way?
Oh yeah. I was just back in Wilmington. I was just back in Wilmington and I hadn't been there in
everybody's like worked
20,
there. Right?
Yeah. 23 years. I was there doing a movie called The Grave.
Keith, lean into your, mic in.
With the Jonas Brothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's when De Laurentiis had a studio down there.
Yep.
And then I was just there shooting a wonderful new movie called Bewildered.
Is everything just entertainment these days in terms of There used to be, like, you guys wouldn't want to do TV back in the early days of your film career, right? Now, obviously, it doesn't matter, and there's a million networks, and doesn't.
The animal has changed, you know.
Well, House of Cards, I thought was fabulous. Yeah, I was just like glued to that.
When we were growing up, there was definitely a distinction between television actors and movie actors. The twain didn't really mix, with few exceptions. Nowadays, that is not true at all.
You know, it's weird. There used to be a lot of rules in show business in general that weren't really based on anything. They were just rules. Mm-hmm. When I was doing radio, and I'd say, well, let's syndicate the morning show into San Diego on 91X. We were number one there at nights for 10 years. They'd go, yeah, we want guys who are here. And I'd go, yeah. Well, wouldn't you rather just have someone who's good? And they'd go like, no, we'd rather have local. You know, they want the local stuff. And I'm like,
I mean, it could be nice.
But I was like, does that really apply to anything like TV shows or Howard Stern or whoever? Like, don't we just want the best? And like, and there was a bunch of rules. Like when mm-hmm. Kevin and Bean, when Bean moved out to Seattle area, it's like, you got to be in the same room. Like, no, you don't. Like, there are no more rules anymore. And it turns out the rules were just sort of weird and self-imposed. Like, we didn't really need them.
Well, and like going to an Asian market to, hawk a product. Mm-hmm. And now everybody does everything here. You know, it used to be sort of a shameful secret that you were endorsing something, that you were a sponsor
of
something.
Yeah, if Clooney wanted to.
I thought you meant literal Asian shopping market.
When you said market, I thought you said
store. I'm like, what's so American? Yeah, that's cutting the ribbon?
No, you'd have to go. You'd have to go to Japan, right. Get your payday, do your cigarette commercial, and then come back home. Now,
I was horrified that Sir Laurence Olivier was doing Polaroid. Remember that?
Yeah.
Does anybody remember? You remember that, right?
Find it, Max Pat.
Polaroid. And he said, well, I've spent so much of my life in the theater, and he says, I'm trying to get some money to give my kids when I die.
Yeah. It's weird. It was, and also, yes, that weird standard where you had to be an artist, and if you wanted some money, you had to go out of town and pretend like you didn't want money. It's weird. The only version of that there is today is bands and or everybody doing private gigs, like bar mitzvahs and playing these kids' parties and Sultan of Brunei and stuff like that. I mean...
Aaron, you're still talking about money. Sultan of Brunei is hiring you to play.
Oh, sure.
Whatever.
Yeah. That's going to be top dollar.
It's going to be top dollar.
Yeah. Right.
I was at a wedding where Don Henley played the rehearsal dinner.
You what?
I told the story.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. I was
right.
At a wedding where Don Henley played the rehearsal dinner.
There you go. I wasn't afraid.
The good of his heart. He just happened to be there in town. No, of course he was paid.
Right.
Yeah.
I heard.
He was great.
John Stewart, my agent told me, got offered $1 million to do a bar mitzvah. And he turned it down.
My God.
Wow.
That is integrity.
That's F me money.
Yeah.
That's good.
I'd be like, I'll do it for $500K. And how many times do I have to blow the kid? No, that's not part of it. He's a man. He is a man. By definition, he is a man.
Once he reached from that Torah. Well, to these guys' point, there's a great story I've told a long time ago, but on shooting Three Kings, right? David O. Russell, who's gone on to become a great director, this was George Clooney when he was just off of ER. He might have still been doing ER at the time, but he was David O. Russell kept ribbing him, like basically dismissing his ideas, like, all right, TV actor, I got this. You're a TV. Like, it wasn't common for guys, especially dramatic comedy. You had Eddie Murphy and whoever. It was a little more common, but with dramatic guys, even George Clooney, who all now to be George Clooney, at the time was just, all right, TV actor, get in line. Well, let the movie people take care of this. You know,
yeah.
It was a dogma.
And it'll end up, he's probably made more money off of selling his booze than he will off of all his collective works. I mean, that's just the new world order everyone's in. But I like it. Like, it's just everyone go out and make some hay while the sun is shining, and God bless you. You want to sing songs? You want to make tequila? You want to do TV? You want to do movies? Just go do it. There are no more
rules
anymore. But except for just don't get caught up in this Me Too business.
That's right.
That could derail the dream.
Can you indulge me in another
question?
Yeah,
ask some questions.
Let me know when you guys get bored.
Hold on. These aren't for me?
No.
Are they about high school football?
I have a question for Tom.
Oh, well, forget it.
I have a question for Tom. one of my all-time favorite movies, 5 stars out of 5. I love it. Is Inception. I've been trying to get Adam to watch it for years, and he's resistant for some reason. Can you talk about – so I always – it's such an ambitious movie, and it's so long, and it's so involved and intricate. Talk about the process with maybe David Fincher versus Oliver Stone. They strike me as a similar creative type, but you obviously know
Chris
them.
Chris Nolan.
You mean Chris Nolan? Yeah. Yeah, that was a mistake.
I mean, they're very different. Yeah. But Chris Nolan is a very nice guy. I mean, very, very, very kind, nice guy. And one thing I did like about him was he would stand out by the camera when you shot the scene, and that reminded me of the early days. Like, the director would always be right next to the camera watching you, or maybe sitting on an apple box watching you. And then they came up with TV assists, and the next thing you know, they started disappearing from the set, and they're back
Video
and
watching, Village.
Watching and Video Village. They're watching. I've had arguments with two directors about, like, I go, no, you can't see it on that tiny little black screen you're looking. It was a little black screen, not a bigger color one. But
That's an amazing
And I go,
detail.
No. I said, I did that. You missed that. And they go, what? I go, well, you look at the rushes. Print it. Print it. Do me the favor. Print it and look at the rushes tomorrow. Or – you can't – I said, here we are in this big – it's white sand, and I'm looking at the assistant camera here and stuff, and I go, and the loader, and I go, look how silhouetted they are. You can't even see faces on this little camera. But I bet you do when you see it tomorrow in rushes. And – or it's some low-lit scene, and it's in color, but you still can't see it. And I said, you got to get out there and stand next to the camera.
If only we had two actors right in front of us doing the scene.
Yeah, Clint Eastwood called me once and wanted to know about Wolfgang Petersen. Wanted to know about Wolfgang Petersen. I said, work with him. Another You'll love the guy. Director, yeah. He's funny. He's great. I said, he's super organized. He's German, for God's sakes. I go, and I said, here's exactly how he'll do a scene. And I said, and if you nail it in two takes, he'll go, great, move on. Ooh. I like that.
Was this before In the Line of Fire?
I know, I heard. But I said, so he probably shoots as fast as you do, and he's incredibly organized. I said, you know, he really, really is. And I said, go out to dinner with him before you work. I said, he's hysterical. He's really funny.
This is pre In the Line of Fire, obviously.
Yes, and that was the movie.
That was the movie.
That was the movie.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah.
Great call. Thanks for making that happen. Yeah. That's one of my favorite movies, too.
No, he did call and ask, and I told him, and I go – and I said, and he will stand when he's got all that figured out, all the technical stuff, and you rehearsed it twice with him in the trailer. And I said, everything's done, ready to go, props, this, that. You'll shoot it, get a couple takes. And I said, he will stand by the camera and watch you like the old days. You remember that? He goes, yeah. I go, I miss that. He goes, I do too.
Brian, you know, let me take over.
Yeah, please.
Keith David, same question. My show. I want to take
well
over.
Well done. Well done. We can all learn something here.
All right. Ask Keith a question involving movies, and then we'll bring it on home.
Okay, I'll just go with the funniest movie I've ever seen in the theater. When I saw There's Something About Mary in the theater, it was a... It was a shared experience. It's a laugh riot that we missed entire swaths of dialogue because it was a packed theater and people were going insane. Especially the Frank and Beans moment where you one of your greatest scenes with the Frank and the Beans. Did you have a sense of how funny it was when you were doing it on the set? Because if you're shooting a movie like that, out of order, blah blah blah, it's not as funny as when you see the final product.
I wish I had a copy of some of the outtakes. I mean, there were a couple of times opening the door and just seeing Ben with those teeth in.
Yeah,
I
was
just
going,
what do you want? We had a great, great
And the
time.
Mailman comes through the window.
Yeah, Lenny, that was funny.
If you want to see a movie with two guys who know funny, know dramatic, and know everything in between, it's called American Dresser. It's in theaters and on demand. That is next Friday. That's September 21st. Gina Gershon, Bruce Dern is in this one as well. I saw the trailer. It looks amazing. I did not see the film yet, but I will, and I will tell everyone how much I love it. Brian, this is a good day for you, right?
It really is.
Happy birthday to Brian.
Didn't even start with Major League or Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah.
The Thing!
We will do a little good sports. Brian, you got a Bet Online piece for us?
You and I are competing in the Bet Online challenge with Podcast One. It was a bad week for me. I made five picks and ultimately ended up with 1 point because I lost two. I lost my best bet. I had the Saints over the Buccaneers at home, and they lost in a huge upset. Thankfully, I'm ahead of Adam Carolla with 0 points.
Mm-hmm.
0 points. Buddy, what happened? You're Lions.
Hey, I've told everyone it takes as much skill to get a zero on Rotten Tomatoes as it does to get 100. And I say the same thing when it comes to betting. It takes as much skill okay. to go over five as it does to go okay. five
well,
for
I had,
five.
I had a paltry 1 point, not the perfect zero. This week, I'm doubling down, by the way. I'm going with the Saints again. They're at home over Cleveland. I cannot see them losing. It would be as shocking to me as if they lost to the Bucks.
Yeah.
So check out our picks if you want at podcast1sportsnet.com.
And check out American Dresser. Again, out next Friday, September 21st. You can get on demand or you can see it in select theaters as well. Keith and Tom, thank you guys very much for coming in.
Really
take
appreciate
a
it.
Quick break with the good sports. Jeff Cesario in studio next.
Ace and Shecky, let's do it.
Podcast One Sports Network presents Good Sports.
Hi and hello, sports fans. Welcome to a brand new episode of Good Sports here on Podcast One Sports. Dave Dameshek here, Adam Carolla over there. Reminder, as always, I do it once a week. Go ahead, put your headphones on or otherwise plug it into the car. However you want to do it, Dave's of Thunder is back. Make sure you check that out wherever you find your podcasts. Provided by Podcast One. Ace! Week two of the NFL season is here, but I want to talk about a little bit of baseball, if we could here. Gary behind the glass, can you pull up for me? I think the guy's name is Brady Feigl. Have you seen this? The two minor league baseball players? I should have given you a heads up about this 2 seconds before I brought it up. Anyway, see if you can track that one down. In the meantime, though, Ace, what do you make of? People are getting, yep, there it is, Dylan. You got that. Gary, if you could share that with, you can't share that with.
Two guys
Carolla.
That look like.
Brady Feigl, correct?
Is it the same guy?
Those guys, they're two guys, two minor league baseball players. They both have red beards. They both wear those funky baseball-y glasses. They are unrelated, those two guys right there. They are identical twins. Their names are both Brady Feigl. They are separated by 5 years. So it is not one of those, oh, they were actually twins, but they got separate. 5 years difference. That is the craziest thing I've ever seen in sports. Much worse than
Wait a second. Are they related or not?
They are not
They're
related.
Just both named Feigl.
Both named Feigl. Both named Brady. Mm. Both with red beards. They look identical. One is lefty, one is righty, and they are unrelated. I think that is one of the craziest things that I've seen. Worse than Jack and Jim Youngblood both being white defenders for the LA Rams at the same time. Unrelated. Greg and Mike Pruitt, two black running backs for the Cleveland Browns at the same time. Unrelated. This trumps that by a lot.
I was just talking about Pruitt and a running back. What was that, Gary? It's a Max Pata thing, but
we were just talking
about Pruitt being another running back on the when they're unrelated.
You guys were talking about tearaway jerseys on the Carolla show, and Greg Pruitt was the guy who always wore them, and it became the Greg Pruitt rule when they banned it.
Oh, right. And I said, wasn't there another running back named Pruitt on the Browns or in the league too? And it was the same team. Yeah, that's we're
Mike,
just getting into
and
the Pruitt.
Spelled the same way, Pruitt. And there were Drew and Preston Pearson, both on the both on the Cowboys. Again, unrelated. It's crazy. But this, like I say, you got to look this up. Feigl, F-E-I-G-L, if you're listening and want to look it up. It really is remarkable.
Hey, can I say this to everybody? I'm going to do a little role-playing with myself, okay?
Okay.
And I'm going to do a little A and B. The first one is what I get. It's involving sports and baseball. We're on the subject. You brought up baseball. I'm on baseball. And the second one is what I should get. You know, the first one is reality, what happens constantly. And then the second one I will enact in a role-playing with myself. Which is what I should get.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So here's how it goes. I was watching the TV, was up on the screen. I don't know where I was, but I was with my wife, Lynette, and one of the Angels players pulled up to the plate
with the pine tar smeared all over the helmet, just all over the front of the helmet.
That's one of your least favorite things.
Well, the reason it's one of my least favorite things is because it's called a uniform, and you're not allowed to desecrate your uniform. You wouldn't be allowed to put an SCP sticker on the side of your helmet and go, well, I think it's cool. My dad used to be a mechanic. And someone could say, well, what's that got to do with baseball? There's pine tar. They put it on a rag. You wipe it on the bat. It's all over the bat. It's all over your hands. There's no reason to get more pine tar. If I put pine tar on your thumb and forefinger and stuck it together, you could walk around this neighborhood for 2 weeks. When you came back, it would still smell like pine. It would still be sticky. To walk from the dugout to the plate to watch a couple of balls and strikes, it doesn't dissipate. You can't remove it. It's a totally insane.
You don't need to refresh it each trip to the plate, is what you're saying.
Not only each, you can refresh it each trip to the plate by taking the pine tar rag and wiping it. A, you can put the pine tar on the bat itself, schmutz it all over the bat. Number two, you can get it all over your hands and your gloves. Three, you can take the towel that's infused with it, emulsified with pine tar, rub it all over, and then throw it to the bat boy, and then walk 28 feet to the plate. That pine tar will last you that bat. That bat, the average at bat is 4.2 pitches or 5.7 pitches or whatever it is. Where the fuck is the pine tar going in that period? You're in a dome. Where's the pine tar going? A big wind kicked up and removed all of the pine tar. Technically, you don't even really need pine tar. You're wearing batting gloves. You can hang on to the bat. Is there a tennis player that uses pine tar? Who's swinging that thing harder than a tennis player and for a longer period of time? I've seen some I saw one recently. It was like 39 volleys back and forth. Did the guy call a timeout and go, I can no longer hold this instrument. I must go get a... And
tar's right in the title, too.
The tar. Yes. It's the oldest thing on the planet. It doesn't go away. Tennis players oftentimes just use one hand. You've got two hands on this bat. But either way, you want pine tar. Fine. You don't get to smear it all over the front of your fucking helmet and walk up to the plate. It looks a mess. It's called a uniform. So I said to Lynette, and this is how the conversations I have go. You see this guy? Look at him. Look at him. He's got the pine tar smeared all over the front of his helmet. It's a mess. He's desecrated. The symbol, by the way, whether it's the Yankees or the Red Sox, is right in the front of the helmet. He's got the pine tar smeared. He's desecrated his team symbol with the pine tar. What's pine tar? It's the sticky stuff. Why? It helps him hold the bat. Oh, so he just wants to hold the bat better. Yeah, no. Yeah, right. He does, but he doesn't need to bring it to the plate. Doesn't he need the bat at the plate? Yeah, it helps him hold the bat. Yep. He doesn't need to bring the pine tar to the plate, but they use it to hold the bat. Yes, I understand. When I'm complaining about something, I'm not saying, what does this do? I'm complaining about why they're doing it. Whether it's about, you know, if I say to you, oh, a Pontiac Aztec is a horrible minivan, and you go to me, minivans are used by families to commute. I'm not asking you what a minivan is. I'm explaining that I don't like this particular minivan. It's confusing to me how many people answer your question with explaining what something does.
Yes.
It's weird. It's like, they go, yeah, I go, the pine tar's all over the helmet. It's a disgrace. It's a mess. It's an eyesore. They use it to hold the bat. Considering I'm smarter than almost everyone I'm talking to, could you please factor that in when you think I'm asking what this thing is or what it does, and stop making your number one answer to me what the thing does? And then I have to double back and I have to go, I know they use it for grip, but it's schmutzed all over the front of the helmet. It's an eyesore. They should ban it. Then the person will say, ban pine tar? And I'll go, no, from putting it on the helmet. They use that to grip the bat. Yes, I understand. Okay.
You know when people go through certain traumas in youth, then it blacks out and they don't remember it. I think that's probably what happened to Lynette. She still is not over the whole George Brett pine tar thing in Yankee Stadium.
Too high up on the bat.
And like, she like, what is it again? Like, you know, you have to start from scratch with her because she doesn't even like reliving
everyone
that.
Everyone I've had this conversation with, which is everybody I know, Sheck
Check excluded. Their first answer is what pine tar does. They try to explain to me what pine tar does, which has never been the like. It's like me saying, what do you need a gun for on a plane? And they'll go, a gun can be used in a military application. I'm saying on a plane. What do you need it on a plane for? In old Western days, the sheriff oftentimes kept a, what they call a six shooter that had six chambers. Yes, I'm saying why is it on a plane? Not what is it?
Late in the 1880s, they developed something called automatic.
That's right. All right. So here's how I'd like that conversation to go.
Yes.
Look at that guy. He's got pine tar all over his goddamn batting helmet. It's ugly and it's a disgrace and they should outlaw it. And they go, you're right, chief. And then we move on.
That would be a better world.
Instead of explaining to me what pine tar is and why they use
it. Quickly, I want to tell you one thing. There's a big, it's like a rich man, poor man kind of effect. And I don't know exactly how to say. But the do as I say, not as I do thing. When you have like the remote control and you're like, it's not working. And then you say to whoever, like, yeah, the remote control's not working. And they say, did you turn it on and off? Like, yeah, right. of course I did that.
Is it plugged in?
And then it's offensive that they say that. And then they say, let me try. And then they do the same thing. You're like, of course, those are the five steps I took before I did anything else. But if it's reversed the other way, can you rightly claim that you don't do the remote's not working. Oh, give it to me. I can make it. Don't you, we do not walk the walk that we talk, right?
Well, I want to say this. I do want to write a book called So You Think I'm Insane. Because I have conversations with people all the time that if it really went the way they were going, I would be clinically insane. My kid's nanny will say to me, I'm going to the store. Do you want anything? And I'll say, what store are you going to? And she'll go, what story? And I go, yes, that makes me, it makes me insane. It makes me insane. You are saying you are clinically insane if you announce you're going to the store and I ask, tell me a story or what's the story? That means I'm an insane person because I'm on completely non sequitur land.
Right.
And then I'm going to write a follow-up book called I'll Always Be Talking About What We're Talking About. Because I have people jump subjects all the time and I go, I'm talking about what you're talking about. Why? It'd be cruel of me to ask for a story.
Yes, people who are wordy like you and me probably get that a lot. People like, I'm making an analogy to relate to what you're saying. And they're like oh, that reminds me of when the Pittsburgh Penguins play a game. And they're like, whoa, that's not what we're talking about. I know, I'm bringing this in to marry up with what you're talking about to make a point.
Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. All right, let me tell you about what you should have going on. BetOnline.ag. Football's here. I love saying that. I'm going to repeat it. Football's here. Get all the action for college and NFL football. Don't wait to make your online wagers. Head to betonline.ag to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. Use the promo code podcast1 and receive a 50% sign-up bonus today. That's podcast1 for a 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag, exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Great NFL and college football matchups all week long. Get in on the action today. Sign up today at betonline.ag. Use the promo code podcast1, that's the number one, for a 50% bonus when you sign up. Take advantage of this incredible offer at betonline.ag. Your online sportsbook experts. All right, Chuck.
All right, no good sports tomorrow. Ace and Company are doing a live show, so we'll talk to you next week. Until then, for Adam Carolla, Dave Damaschek, Podcast One Sports, good sports, out.